There has been virtually no end to the stories focusing on the lean-in concept put forth by then COO of Facebook, Sheryl Sandberg, focusing on whether highly talented, invisible, and basically well-off women could have it all. But as writer Lori Penny wrote in the New Statesman, and I quote, "While we all worry about the glass ceiling, there are millions of women standing in the basement, and the basement is flooding. Domestic workers, the people who come into others' homes to cook, clean, nanny, or provide health care. Historically, many of these workers were African-American women who were servants to families. Today, household workers are critical to our economy, but all too often, they're the invisible and underpaid part of society. Why are they so invisible, and what needs to happen to lift them out of that flooding basement?" Joining us is Dr. Eileen Boris, professor of history, black studies, and global studies. She's with the University of California, Santa Barbara. Eileen, because these workers are hidden in our homes, they become invisible. Tell us more.
You know, we think of the home as home sweet home. We think of it as the sacred place, this place for the family, the place you retreat from the world of hustle and bustle.
Sure.
But for people who work as domestic and household workers, it is their workplace. But in both our popular imagination and in our laws, the home often is not recognized as a workplace. Even the New Deal labor laws stopped at the front door, so to speak.
Right, the Fair Labor Standards Act.
Right.
Right.
Domestic workers, but also agricultural workers, who sometimes were from the same families or the same people, were not included in either the Fair Labor Standards Act or the National Labor Relations Act, which gave us collective bargaining.
Right.
Why? For two reasons. One is what we've already alluded to, that is the home as this place that the law can't go into as an arena of privacy. But secondly, because of the power of the then Democratic Southern Senate and House members, who now are Republican.
Yes.
So we've had a political switch in this country.
Yeah.
But they really wouldn't pass these laws if their low-wage workforce was included.
So then we see issues such as pay, and I saw one figure that said 67% of live-in workers are paid below the state minimum wage, and that medium hourly wage of these folks, $6.15 an hour. Benefits don't happen, hours are long, and there's abuse. There can be abuse, can't there?
Oh yes. There can be quite a bit of abuse. There are horror stories all the time. But even in the best conditions, how do you tell when your home is also your workplace with live-ins, that you're just going to retreat to your room, the baby's crying after hours, or the pressure of, oh, won't you work this evening because I'm having a dinner party?
Mm-hmm.
That's very difficult because it is a form of intimate labor. You're in a relationship with these people. But in any form of care work and intimate work, those lines sometimes get fuzzy.
And usually to the employer's monetary benefit.
Right.
I'm speaking with Dr. Eileen Boris, who is at the University of California, Santa Barbara. She is a professor of history, black studies, and global studies, and she is also the chair of the Department of Feminist Studies, looking at the invisible household worker. And I'm interested in what you found, Eileen, in terms of, are these employers that are underpaying and mistreating workers, is that deliberate, or are they falling into that mindset of, well, that's just what my friends and I pay the nanny?
It's the structures of and the cultural assumptions that make domestic labor a bad job. After all, this is the work that makes all the other work possible.
Yes.
Also, somehow because it's in the home and there aren't standard labor contracts, and people think that it's just an extension of what they do if it's a woman hiring another woman, there is this tendency not to pay a living wage. It's what the market can bear. But sometimes people just don't know how to do it. The laws and the systems are not set up for someone who only comes into your house 2 hours a week to pay Social Security.
Sure.
to pay workmen's compensation. The whole, it is structured as an informal economy. So I'd rather not blame employers, though there are some very deliberately bad employers.
There are some blameworthy ones, but you're right. As a body, it's not, they're not to blame in that deliberate sense.
In a personal sense, but in a structural sense. After all, there are class and race differences between women, and some women benefit from oppressing other women. We know that historically.
So, Dr. Boris, what about remedies? First of all, what do you feel needs to happen, or can anything happen on a policy and legislative front? Because, as you say, do we as a nation want the government poking its nose into our homes?
The home is a workplace. There has to be ways to inspect. And not ways that are intrusive, of course. Mm-hmm. I was just at an international congress of domestic workers in Uruguay. And what the Uruguayan government does is that they'll have a inspection of a whole area of the city just to check on whether the employers are with the labor law in that country, which involves social protections and minimum wages.
So their laws offer that protection to household workers.
Yeah, it does. And many other countries in the world do too, but the question is enforcement. In Uruguay, they are enforcing the law. Somebody might complain, but it's a fearful situation. If your employer knows you complain that they're not paying you the right wage or withholding your wage, then you're going to get fired, and then you're going to be without a job. Mm-hmm. So what happens is the inspector goes to the whole area and announces it. The point is there are ways to inspect the home, but more importantly, who will inspect the home? It will be the housewives and domestic workers or household workers themselves working together in an alliance, in an association.
And it strikes me that conversations like the one we are having are key to making our household workers more visible and more valued.
Yes, but it isn't just our valuing them because we're not abusing them in a physical sense, but it is valuing them with living wages. And here, public policy can help. There can be systems that make it easier to pay into Social Security and workers' compensation and health insurance. The first step, of course, was the lifting of the so-called companionship rule by the Obama administration. That is, there had been a wage and hour regulation that defined a certain group of domestic workers and care workers as elder companions, and so they didn't have to get overtime or the minimum wage. And that now is illegal. So when people understand what the norm is, and we have to do a lot of education, and the laws are in place, then it is possible for strong worker associations and employer allies in this sense, and community groups to police and to issue complaints to departments of labor and other inspectorates.
Much food for thought. Dr. Eileen Boris, University of California, Santa Barbara, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.